that are communities of color. But what we also know is, and why I keep coming back to the work that Congress needs to do, is that even if states create pardons, there's still people that are still going to be impacted because the federal barriers have not been changed, right? So governors are, you know, with governors, we really want them to expeditiously move pardons forward, but we recognize that a lot of that is going to be impacting communities of color, but we really need the federal government to remove the barriers now. If the president understands that cannabis legalization or cannabis regulation or cannabis prohibition has created barriers for people getting access to housing, employment, housing, benefits, and really, and for us, we're including the conversation of deportation and detention. Let's not only have the conversation of the descheduling of cannabis, but also let's have the conversation of changing the administrative barriers that are impeding people from being full participants in society.
Well, Cassandra Frederick, clearly we have a lot more to talk about, but we have no more time today. Executive Director of the Drug Policy Alliance, a national nonprofit fighting to end the so-called war on drugs. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for two full-time jobs, an associate digital editor, and a people and culture manager. You can go to democracynow.org to learn more and apply. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Join KBOO every Friday at 5:30 p.m. for Counterspin, a show that provides a critical examination of major media stories and exposes what the mainstream media missed. Counterspin exposes and highlights censored stories, sexism, racism, and homophobia in the news, the power of corporate influence, gaffes and goofs by leading TV pundits, and more. That's every Friday at 5:30 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
The KBOO Evening News produces a nightly one-hour newscast every weekday night. We need writers, editors, reporters, and more to make this grassroots community resource happen. Are you interested? Would you like to try something exciting? Training in writing for radio, interviewing, field recording, and audio editing is all free of charge. But you have to go through the KBOO volunteer orientation first. For more information, email newsdirector@kboo.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, President Biden warns of potential nuclear Armageddon. Phil Knight donates to the Republican candidate for Oregon governor. And, in international news, the Nobel Committee announces the winners of the 2022 Peace Prize. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 7th, 2022. I'm Jar Salem. President Joe Biden is worried about a potential nuclear Armageddon, a risk he says we have not faced since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. This comes as Russian officials talk about the possibility of using tactical nuclear weapons in the Ukraine conflict. Speaking at a Democratic fundraiser last night, Biden said the Russian president is, quote, not joking when he talks about the use of tactical nuclear weapons or biological or chemical weapons, end quote. He added the threat is real, quote, because his military is, you might say, significantly underperforming, end quote. Putin has repeatedly alluded to using his country's nuclear arsenal, including last month when he announced plans to conscript Russians to serve in Ukraine. U.S. officials have warned of this prospect for months. However, recent U.S. intelligence assessments have shown no evidence that Putin has imminent plans to deploy nuclear weapons. Biden was apparently speaking broadly about the administration's growing concerns over Putin's threats. The White House said his remarks were in line with warnings he's made in speeches at the UN General Assembly and that other senior administration officials have made recently. Officials added there are no planned changes in the alert posture of U.S. nuclear forces. In 1962, a 13-day showdown followed the U.S. discovery of the Soviet Union's deployment of nuclear weapons to Cuba. Many regarded that situation as the closest the world has ever come to nuclear annihilation. The crisis sparked a renewed interest in arms control on the part of the U.S. and the Soviet Union. Biden added that he was still trying to figure a way out for Putin in Ukraine. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said last week that the U.S. has been clear to Russia about what the consequences of using nuclear weapons in Ukraine would be. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky said earlier Thursday that Putin understands the world would never forgive a Russian nuclear attack. Biden's comments came during a private fundraiser for Democratic Senate candidates in New York City. The event was open to only a handful of reporters without cameras or recording devices. Nike co-founder Phil Knight is backing Republican gubernatorial candidate Christine Drazen. He has donated $1 million to her campaign after previously giving $3.75 million to Betsy Johnson, an unaffiliated candidate. Drazen is running against Johnson and Democratic nominee for governor Tina Kotek. Knight's donation follows a $250,000 check Associated General Contractors gave Drazen on October 3rd and a $1.5 million check the Republican Governors Association gave her on October 5th. Kotek has also reported a number of large donations in the past few days. $1 million from the Democratic Governors Association, $500,000 from the Pacific Northwest Regional Council of Carpenters, $330,000 from the Oregon League of Conservation Voters, and $300,000 from the American Federation of Teachers. Kotek has raised about $15 million since the race began and has $2.3 million left to spend. Drazen has raised about $13 million and has $3.17 million remaining. Drazen's campaign manager, Trey Rosser, said, quote, "Phil Knight is a pioneering and respected leader, not just in Oregon, but across the globe. It's a tremendous honor to have his support," end quote. The $3.75 million contribution to independent candidate Betsy Johnson was the most an individual donor has ever contributed to an Oregonian politician. Four recent polls all show Drazen and Kotek in a statistical tie, with Johnson trailing far behind. Experts have questioned whether Johnson's presence in the race would siphon more votes from the Democrats or the Republicans. A program incentivizing the purchase of fresh fruits and vegetables is available at many Oregon sites. Eric Tegetoff has more on that story.
As the weather gets cooler, some farmers' markets in Oregon are winding down, but a program that incentivizes buying fresh fruits and vegetables is still available for people with food benefits. The Double Up Food Bucks program offers dollar-for-dollar match for food bought with the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program so that people can purchase produce. At many farmers' markets, the match goes up to $20. But Molly Natariani, head of the Farmers Market Fund, says Double Up Food Bucks is offered in other venues, too.
Currently, it's offered at about 26 grocery stores in 19 counties. And then there's a large amount of CSAs, or community-supported agriculture farms, that also accept Double Up Food Bucks. So for shoppers who want to purchase a commitment from a farm with their SNAP, they'll get a discount over the course of the season.
Natariani also notes that while some are packing up, nearly 30 farmers markets that participate in the program across the state will keep going in November and December. Even in January through April, she says about a dozen markets stay open. Natariani says these benefits are especially needed right now, with hunger at its highest level in a century and inflation compounding the issue. She believes the Double Up Food Bucks program is a triple win.
It's helping families access more fruits and veggies. That money is working twice. It's also going directly into the pockets of local farmers, so they're making extra money and making new customers. And then it also really helps support local economies.
Natariani says people have until the end of the year to spend any Double Up Food Bucks they have accumulated this year. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Politics surrounding Social Security are causing concerns, despite an expected benefit increase. Mary Sherman has more on the story.
The roughly 2.4 million Ohioans who rely on Social Security income are expected to get a big boost in benefits. But advocates for the program are voicing concerns about its future stability, especially in this political climate. The annual Social Security Cost of Living Adjustment, or COLA, which could be announced any day now, is predicted to be close to 9% for 2023. President of the Ohio Alliance for Retired Americans, Norman Wernette, says amid record high inflation, the increase will be crucial to help older Americans cope with inflation.
Social Security is there because we need some way to have a life after a life of work. Not every worker has been able to put money back or have a good pension, and actually pensions have been diminished over the last 30 years.
But the Social Security Board of Trustees report continues to forecast a long-term cash shortfall that could lead to reduced benefits in 13 years. Some Republicans have floated cutting or sunsetting the program, but Wexner's group and others are supporting bills in Congress that would expand benefits and boost the cap on the amount of income subject to Social Security tax. John Bauman with the advocacy group Social Security Works explains the current wage cap for the program is $147,000, which means those who make more than that don't have money withheld on the additional earnings. Bauman argues the cap should be lifted.
A Koch brother or Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or a random rich person stop paying at $147,000. So if they made like $50 million that year, they're paying .00000000000001% in. And how is that fair?
He notes the money in the Social Security Trust Fund comes directly from a worker's wages during all their working life, plus their employer's contributions. 1.8 million Ohioans receiving Social Security benefits are age 65 or older. For Ohio News Connection, I'm Mary Sherman.
Financial literacy decreases stress. Eric Tegetoff tells us more.
Between rising inflation and the ups and downs of the stock market, it isn't surprising that folks are concerned about their own financial situation. And financial literacy is one antidote to this money stress. An Idaho-based credit union is sharing these skills with people young and old. Frank Alvarez is a branch manager in Walla Walla, Washington, for P1FCU, with its headquarters in Lewiston. Alvarez says his passion is teaching financial skills, and he's partnered with a local nonprofit, Blue Mountain Action Council, to bring them to people for free. He says one topic they emphasize is creating savings and how it can prevent the need for borrowing money at high interest rates.
It comes to budgeting, because while it's okay to lend against your credit and such, there are just ways of doing it without putting you behind.
According to a recent bank rate survey, 58% of people are concerned about the amount of emergency savings they have, up from 44% in 2020. Participants in the class have ranged in age from 15 to 65. Alvarez says he'll often teach classes to older people in Spanish. People from that class then bring their children, and he'll teach the younger students in English. He notes it's important to have these lessons in Spanish.
I can teach it in English as well. I just know that there is a higher need in Spanish, and it takes longer on that class itself.
He adds the financial education classes meet once a week for 6 weeks, with a different topic every week. Those who complete the class get a certificate and money sent to their bank or credit union account. Participants don't have to be P1FCU members to attend. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
President Biden de-escalates the war on drugs. Young voters are closely watching the next election, and Republican Senator candidate Herschel Walker is still under fire. With more on these stories, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Federal war on drugs and mandatory minimums have gotten far out of control. They are not connected to reality.
The White House announced a pardon for all prior federal offenses of simple marijuana possession. Ryan Winters, with a nonpartisan super PAC and American Union, says most Americans believe the war on drugs has failed.
In a poll last year, 65% supported ending the war on drugs, and 63% supported reviewing and reducing the sentences of anyone incarcerated as a result of the war on drugs.
President Joe Biden also encouraged governors to take similar action for state-level offenses. Biden has faced backlash for his support of the 1994 crime bill that led to increased arrest and incarceration rates for drug crimes, especially for people of color. U.S. warships are training with South Korean and Japanese destroyers to shoot down missiles in the Sea of Japan following multiple launches by North Korea this week. Defense Department spokesman Brigadier General Pat Ryder condemned the launches.
We will continue to consult closely with our allies and partners and stand ready to respond appropriately to any potential future provocative acts by North Korea.
He also warned that North Korea could soon conduct its first nuclear test since 2017. Republican Senator Ben Sasse is expected to step down in the coming months after being named the sole finalist for the presidency of the University of Florida. Sasse was among those of the GOP who voted to convict President Donald Trump during his 2021 impeachment. However, he supported Trump's position on votes 95% of the time. During campaign stops Thursday, Republican Georgia Senate candidate Herschel Walker continued to deny allegations that he paid for an abortion for one of his children's mothers.
The Democrats are desperate for this seat. This seat is important. They're very desperate for this seat. I love my family. I always love my family. I'm going to win this race.
Walker, who's running on an anti-abortion platform, is in a tight race with Democratic incumbent Senator Raphael Warnock. Speaking at a church, Warnock asked pastors to encourage their congregations to vote.
You cannot tell them who to vote for, and if you look at my race, you don't even need to tell them. As we say in the hood, they know.
Some of the country's youngest voters are keeping a close eye on national and global issues ahead of the election. A survey found 86% of Gen Z voters felt the midterms would have an impact on their lives, and 43% felt it would be an even greater impact than the 2024 presidential election. Proud Boys member Jeremy Bertino pleaded guilty to seditious conspiracy. Meanwhile, the leader of the group and four members face the same charge related to the January 6th attack at the Capitol and await trial. And the House committee investigating January 6th has scheduled its final hearing for 1 p.m. next Thursday. No details about witnesses or topics have been released. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, an in-depth look behind the headlines produced by the media watch group FAIR. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will show some cloud cover with a low of 52 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be generally sunny with a high near 70. Today in history, King George III issued the Royal Proclamation of 1763, closing indigenous lands in North America, north and west of the Alleghenies, to white settlements. The quote of the day is from cellist Yo-Yo Ma, born today in 1955, who said, "If you are only worried about not making a mistake, then you will communicate nothing." City Mayor Eric Adams just declared a state of emergency to help respond to the city's migrant crisis. He told reporters today that situation will cost the city $1 billion this fiscal year. Adams said, quote, "We now have a situation where more people are arriving in New York City than we can immediately accommodate, including families with babies and young children. Once the asylum seekers from today's buses are provided shelter, we would surpass the highest number of people in recorded history in our city's shelter system," end quote. The mayor is asking for emergency federal and state aid. Adams' declaration will direct all relevant city agencies to coordinate efforts to respond to the crisis and to construct the city's humanitarian emergency response and relief centers. New York City has more than 61,000 people in its shelter system. If asylum seekers continue to enter the city at the current rate, the total population within the shelter system will exceed $100,000 in the year to come. That system is already operating at nearly 100% capacity. The city expects to spend at least $1 billion by the end of the fiscal year to deal with the influx of migrants. Other states are busing migrants to major U.S. cities. As of the beginning of October, Texas has spent more than $18 million sending people who have been processed and released by immigration authorities in Texas border communities to Washington, D.C., New York City, and Chicago. Texas Governor Greg Abbott said this is his response to the Biden administration's immigration policies. He feels those policies have provided an incentive for more people to cross the border illegally. Adams' administration has accused the governor of using human beings as political pawns, and New York is considering its legal options. Mayor Adams said 42 hotels have been set up as emergency shelters, and that 5,500 migrant children have been enrolled in schools. The city is also exploring a potential program for New Yorkers to volunteer to host asylum seekers and the houseless in their homes. Adams reiterated that New York City is still a sanctuary city, but stressed it is unable to handle such an overwhelming influx of migrants. The mayor has asked the federal government for more resources, including housing assistance. The White House says it is in touch with Adams and is committed to FEMA funding and other support. The mayor said, quote, "We are not telling anyone that New York can accommodate every migrant in the city. We're not encouraging people to send 8-9 buses a day. That is not what we're doing. We're saying that as a sanctuary city with right to shelter, we're going to fulfill that obligation. That's what we're doing," end quote. The state of emergency will be in effect for at least 30 days. Human rights activists from Ukraine, Belarus, and Russia won the Nobel Peace Prize today. This appears to be a strong rebuke to Russian President Vladimir Putin and to the Belarusian president, an authoritarian ally. The Norwegian Nobel Committee awarded the 2022 prize to imprisoned Belarus activist Alice Bilatowski, the Russian Group Memorial, and the Ukrainian Organization Center for Civil Liberties. The panel wanted to honor what it called, quote, "three outstanding champions of human rights, democracy, and peaceful coexistence," end quote. Some in Ukraine resented the Nobel Committee for awarding the Ukrainian group alongside activists from Russia and Belarus because of the Russian invasion. One advisor tweeted that the Nobel Committee has, quote, "an interesting understanding of the word peace," end quote. The Belarus Foreign Ministry denounced the Nobel Committee, calling its choices politicized. Asked if they were intentionally rebuking Putin, the Nobel Committee said the prize was not against anybody, but for the democratic values the winners champion. It did note that both Russian and Belarusian governments were suppressing human rights activists. Bilatowski was a leader of the democracy movement in Belarus in the mid-1980s. He founded the non-governmental organization Human Rights Center Vyazna, continuing to campaign for human rights and civil liberties. He was detained following 2020 protests against the re-election of Belarus's president. He remains in jail without trial and faces up to 12 years in prison if convicted. You don't have to run all out to benefit from exercise. Experts say simple walking can help with heart health. Edwin J. Vieira has more on the story.
Even for people who think they're too busy to exercise, experts say there's one surefire way to squeeze in a modest workout: walking. Though often considered a more casual activity, walking can be beneficial for heart health when a person may not have the time to go to the gym. Cardiologist Dr. Ameya Kulkarni with Kaiser Health says finding time to get in a workout or the space for a treadmill are common barriers people face in trying to exercise, but there are plenty of ways people can sneak in a few steps.
If you're not finding time to exercise, I say park as far as you can in the parking lot from your work or from the grocery store, and that 5 to 10 minutes of extra walking done, let's say 2 or 3 times a day, is walking you wouldn't have done otherwise. So there's sort of opportunities to find exercise in the course of your regular day.
Another common barrier is the weather, especially as chilly fall breezes turn into the frosty wind of winter. Kulkarni recommends trying mall walking since malls are open year-round. The American Heart Association recommends people walk 150 minutes a week. That's just 30 minutes a day to stay active and on the path to a healthier lifestyle. While walking is heart healthy, Kulkarni finds there are some misconceptions about just how healthy it really is. He says a workout doesn't have to be vigorous or strenuous in order to be effective, and wants people to understand that any exercise is a step in the right direction.
What I don't want people to think is if I don't do it perfect, then I can't do it at all. Any amount of activity is better than none. And so if you can get up and get moving a couple times a week, and that's all you can do, it's a great start, and you'll build from there.
For people looking to lose weight and build endurance, Kulkarni adds walking can be the start that develops into much fuller workouts. For anyone looking to do a group walk for a good cause, the American Heart Association is holding one of many heart walks on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. on November 5th. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, Virginia News Connection.
South Dakota is trying to make up for prior election wrongs. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. This election season, South Dakota is starting to implement voting access reforms in light of a recent settlement with tribes. As Mike Moen reports, advocates hope there's proper follow-through.
In the settlement announced last month, the state agreed to designate a voting rights coordinator to ensure statewide compliance by agencies through mandatory training and monitoring. It's the result of a court ruling this spring that said the state violated the National Voter Registration Act. Brett Healy of the Native American advocacy group Four Directions says the situation deserves scrutiny.
The unfortunate thing is even when things get won in court, there's always recidivism, it seems to be, by public officials.
He points to South Dakota's long history of involvement in similar cases. The latest one centered around lack of opportunities to register to vote at motor vehicle and public assistance offices near tribal lands. The Secretary of State says a key change since then includes updated forms at driver's license locations. Other key reforms will be addressed after the November vote. Healy stresses that restricting voting access for Native Americans is still a problem in many states. His organization is assisting with a new lawsuit over voting opportunities for a tribe in northeastern Nevada.
We need to make sure that everybody's got a shot at granting that consent to be governed at the election ballot box.
As for the South Dakota case, the state has until early December to show that core reforms have been implemented. The Secretary of State says they've identified a person to be voting rights coordinator and are making preparations for that role to begin.
That's Mike Moen reporting. A new ABC drama premiered Thursday, Alaska Daily, set in an Alaskan newspaper starring Hillary Swank. The show involves missing and murdered Indigenous women cases. KTOO's Rhonda McBride talks with two Alaska Native writers.
The common thread between Andrew McLean and Vera Starbard, a desire to tell authentically Alaskan stories.
I really hope people see in this, in some way, the Alaska that I love.
Vera Starbard is a Tlingit playwright whose career took off when she was tapped to write episodes for the PBS hit children's series Molly from Denali. Her writing partner, Andrew McLean, is Inupiat, known for his award-winning film from 2011, On the Ice. And even though he's familiar with making movies, McLean says nothing prepared him for a TV series like this.
Somebody compared it to building a train while it's hurtling down the track, and I think that's kind of right.
For the past few months, both Starbard and McLean have been sequestered in what they call the writing room in downtown New York City, where they work with producers and writers that they describe as some of the best in the business. But even so, it hasn't been easy to teach them about Alaska.
The need to kind of educate and to make sure that we're being truthful about our depictions of so many different communities, so many different peoples and tribes and ethnicities and so many different lived realities, it can be overwhelming. That probably causes us to lose the most sleep. That causes me to
I was literally to about to say lose sleep. The most sleep over, yeah. Yes.
McLean says millions of people will watch this show.
Powerful opportunity to educate and a powerful opportunity just to reach out and to kind of tell our stories, hopefully tell our stories in a truthful, authentic way.
I have such a strong belief, and it's so much of the reason I do the work that I do, that Alaska Native people have amazing, wonderful, beautiful, extraordinary things to give to the world.
I'm Rhonda McBride.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A Detroit nonprofit is encouraging youth to pursue environmental careers. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Learning to care for the environment can help inspire young people and give them a new sense of purpose. That principle helps guide youth programming at the Green Door Initiative, a Detroit-based nonprofit. The group runs a paid summer program in which young people from underserved neighborhoods learn about pollution, flooding, and other environmental issues. They also learn about careers in fields such as green building and natural resource management, and get experience with hands-on skills like water monitoring, invasive species removal, and carpentry. Green Door founder Donnell Wilkins says the program can empower and motivate young people.
One young woman, she was 16 years old, and she was not familiar with environmental justice, environmental anything.
But after the program, she earned a bachelor's degree in environmental journalism. Another participant came to the program through the juvenile justice system. At first, he was skeptical.
But he really embraced the program. He found something that really gave him purpose.
And he went on to finish high school.
Those kind of success stories are why we do what we do here at the Green Door.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 7th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. The producer for tonight's newscast is myself, Josh Salem, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Mary Sherman, Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Did you know that KBOO podcasts all our news and talk shows?
You can find the podcast on KBOO's website, kboo.fm, on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Just search for your favorite show and hit subscribe to get all the latest episodes downloaded to your favorite device.
Or search for KBOO on iTunes, Google Play to get all the KBOO podcasts.